What a winker.
What a winker.
The Germans, and they're in trouble. Alcantara couldn't do it. Lineker probably could. And England have equalised. It's Gary Lineker.
Welcome, everybody, to the Final Countdown, a podcast looking back at great finals within the game of football. I am Lewis, here with my co-host Adam.
Hello there.
We're going to get straight into it today, Ad. No messing around. So, what do you remember of the 2006 final?
Well.
Is this you stalling for time because you don't remember anything?
Well, I just said to you, didn't I, off air, that I don't remember an awful lot. I remember, the England parts of it, I remember Rooney getting sent off. I don't remember what we did in the group. God, man, I'm pulling a blank here.
It's because it's not a good group to
remember. Right, okay, cool. I remember how it ends, I think, is the main... This is the one... If something sticks out from 2006, it's Zidane.
Yeah.
That's the thing that sticks out, really. There are probably other bits that I'll go, oh, yeah. But that's the big one.
And it's rare, isn't it? Because sometimes, certainly with some of the FA Cup finals we covered, but a lot of time we'd be like, the tournament was great, but the final itself was disappointing. This is kind of almost the opposite. Not that it's a terrible tournament, but the talking point is the final and everything that goes up to it. So with that, this was hosted back in Europe following Japan and South Korea. So this is Germany's second tournament they hosted. Can you remember the first one?
74.
Very good. The final would be between Italy and France. We're not holding any spoilers there. But the winning of the tournament, in terms of the bidding for it by Germany, was incredibly controversial.
Oh, yeah. This is England gets stitched, don't they?
So I didn't remember this, but clearly you do. So
Jeff Hurst looking incredulous.
Oh, Jeff Hurst. The Germans again. His nemesis. There was some incredible controversy, a huge number of indiscretions, payments between associations, governmental contracts being handed out to other countries.
Dodgy.
We're used to allegedly, it's worth saying, influence other delegates. So this is a few extracts from a wonderful website called Wikipedia. I don't know if you've come across it.
I haven't come across it.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Got loads of stuff on there. But this is an extract, so bear with me because it sums it up better than I could. So in the months leading up to the decision, the sudden interest of German politicians and major businesses in four Asian countries whose delegates were decisive for the vote. Just a week before the vote, the German government lifted their arms embargo on Saudi Arabia and agreed to send grenade launchers to the country. Daimler Chrysler invested several hundred million euros in Hyundai. Both Volkswagen and Bayer announced investments in Thailand and South Korea. So basically, with all of these business investments all into these four very decisive delegates to try and sway the vote for Germany. There was also a scandal where German media mogul Leo Kirch paid millions for usually worthless TV rights for friendly matches of the German team and Bayern Munich. So basically, it's just corrupt through and through, it seems it. Nevertheless, Germany were given it.
Can I just ask, is the basic mechanics of it is that you make loads of money from hosting a World Cup? Is that why people want the World Cup?
It's 50-50.
So they go to these extents.
So what often happens financially with World Cups is the country itself suffers. The infrastructure doesn't actually give you a lot of money back into the country.
Right.
In terms of even with the increased tourism, the amount that extra staff have to be hired, things have to be put on, extra services in terms of transport have to be run. You don't make a lot of money in lots of countries. It actually makes you worse off. However, the people running the tournament get a lot of money, get a lot of business.
So it's not
interest.
About the country.
It's not actually about like the GDP of the country improving. Right. It can actually financially be detrimental. Brazil famously now have been in dire straits because of the part of the reason is the amount of money it took for them to host a World Cup.
Okay.
But what happens is the people who make the decisions get given lots of business contracts, lots of money, and they get to effectively wine and dine with the world's finest. The PR for the country goes through the roof, which is why we use sports washing, etc.
But it's
interesting. Yeah, it doesn't actually, through tourism and through the events themselves, doesn't bring in anywhere near
it
as
much
money.
It makes more sense as a personal greed thing, if I'm honest.
Yeah, exactly. So German news magazine Der Spiegel also alleged that a slush fund with money from then Adidas CEO Robert Louis Dreyfus was used to influence the vote of four Asian members of the FIFA executive committee. So in March 2016, 10 years after the World Cup, it was announced that the FIFA Ethics Committee would be opening proceedings into the bid. So, you know, a prompt response to this.
Yeah.
A decision was then made in February 2021 that chairman of the bid, Franz Beckenbauer, was not guilty. However, interestingly enough, in the findings of this, Beckenbauer said that he had a neurological health issue, so he was not made available for questioning or trial and was unable to help in the investigation.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, brilliant. 2021, they finally decided, oh, it's not guilty, but we couldn't talk to any of the people that were involved.
Unbelievable.
So anyway, that's FIFA being FIFA.
I remember it being quite a shock. I remember watching it, and I remember the English committee looking like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
When the vote came out.
Yeah.
So it was. I remember sitting down thinking we might get this.
In the words of Michel Platini, shenanigans, as he said. But back to the
Les football. Shenanigans.
Imagine being French and using le unironically.
Imagine being French and using the word shenanigans.
Yeah, at what point is this English teacher taught him that word? So back to the football. Eight nations qualified for the finals for the first time. Angola, Czech Republic, Ghana, Ivory Coast, Togo, Trinidad and Tobago, Ukraine, and Serbia and Montenegro. Obviously, Czech Republic, as the Czech Republic, it was their first time. But
yeah, of course,
as Czechoslovakia.
So I have no memory of Angola being there.
No, I would
Did
never...
Did you say Togo as well?
Yep,
Togo. No memory of them.
Yep.
Trinidad and Tobago, England played.
Yes, you are remembering.
Crouchy scored.
It's, yes,
he pulled the guy's
back.
Hair.
Exactly.
Yes. Coming back now.
So in April this year, Zidane had announced he would be retiring after this tournament from all of football.
Wow.
So Zidane, before the World Cup, said this will be my swan
gutsy,
song.
Isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Regardless of what happens, because also France coming off of 2002, their last World Cup, where they was humiliated.
Oh, yeah.
It is a bit of a gamble to say, even if we go out in the group stage, this will be my way to bow out, but it wouldn't quite work out that way. So May would also bring about the Calciopoli scandal in Italy.
Oh, yeah,
so this is where Juventus in particular, but a number of other Serie A clubs, were found guilty of match fixing through telephone conversations.
Good
and
job they
attacks.
Learned their lesson, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. You fast forward another 20 years and... Oh, oops.
Oops, we've done it again.
So Juventus were relegated because of this, and a number of Italian players that would be representing their country despite the findings. But that was basically the background going into this. Italy had been rocked to the core, which, not to be stereotypical, but this wasn't the first match-fixing scandal.
It wouldn't be the last.
No, exactly. But nevertheless, that was the fact that Juventus had been found guilty and relegated and their title being taken away from them was quite a big deal. But Italy were drawn into a group consisting of the US, Ghana and the Czech Republic. Italy won two of those games but ended up drawing 1-1 against the US, with midfield stalwart Daniele De Rossi receiving a four-match ban for an elbow to the face of American Brian McBride.
Wow.
Yeah, really nasty. So it obviously a four-match ban rather than three because it was violent conduct.
I mean, that wasn't his World Cup. Did he play again?
He did play again.
Wow, okay.
But it's really... not about Daniele De Rossi, it's about Marco Materazzi.
Of course
this.
It
For lots more reasons than the obvious. Mm. So I didn't quite realise, obviously I know the role he plays in the final, but Marco Materazzi would replace an injured Alessandro Nesta in the group stages.
Right.
So he wasn't a starting centre-back for Italy. He came in because Nesta had injured himself. France, however, had been drawn with a group of Switzerland, Togo and South Korea. But
they stumbled
through the group stages. God, France drew two games and needed to beat Togo in their last group game to qualify. They did win 2-0 thanks to goals from Omri and Vieira. But yeah, they drew their opening two games.
They had a team.
Yeah, they had a hell of a team. On paper, it was unbelievable.
Is this the World Cup they were all falling out with each other?
Not that I remember.
Do you remember that, though?
Yeah, of course.
It was like a
fight
on the training pitch and stuff.
No, I don't think it was this one. But yeah, they drew against Switzerland and South Korea and needed to win against Togo, which they did. So Materazzi would then be the second Italian sent off. So Materazzi, after Daniele De Rossi, he'd come in to replace Nesta, played some of the group games, but he would be sent off in the last 16 as they beat Australia 1-0 in what I like to call the Christian Vieri derby. You know, he was half Australian.
I didn't know that.
Could have represented Australia at cricket, because apparently he was red hot as a cricketer. But he, you know, chose to make millions as a footballer for Italy, so fair play.
Probably a good decision.
Yeah, probably the right one. But Italy would beat Ukraine convincingly, but then they got taken to extra time in the semi-finals against Germany, with unlikely goal scorer Fabio Grosso breaking the deadlock with penalties only a few minutes away. So this is the commentary clip that I sometimes use where the Italian commentator Grosso, 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 goal di Grosso, goal di Grosso.
It's always close, Italy, Germany, isn't it?
Yeah, really, really close.
That's such a thing for them.
So this was 3 minutes away from going to penalties. Wow. Fabio Grosso scores. And then, something I totally forgot about, Del Piero gets a second because Germany throw everyone forward. Right. And in the last minute, substitute Alessandro Del Piero makes it 2-0.
No way.
So on paper, it looks slightly more convincing than it was. But Italy just managed to get through.
There's Noel Gallagher in the crowd. That's a weird friendship,
isn't
it?
So weird. Yeah. But he, mind you, you imagine his phone book. He's got some great
Del Piero's or Gallagher's?
Gallagher's.
Yeah.
He's mixed with some people over the years.
You just don't expect that.
No, of course you
don't. Del Piero.
Yeah. And it's not like Del Piero's a Man City link either. It's not. Yeah. Very strange.
Very strange.
He wasn't looking too pleased. He said, I've just seen the team sheet. I'm not starting. He said, yeah, but you come on and score though, man. And he was going, oh, I don't know. And anyway, he comes on and he scores, doesn't he? And when you see the footage of him running along the hoardings and then he stops and he kicks the hoardings, well, that's me right in front of him. But now, he says he was going to celebrate with his wife, right? But he wasn't. He was coming over to high-five the chief, funny. So anyway.
So France had the harder route to the final, though. So that was Italy's. France had the harder route and would face the beginnings of the Spain team. But they would put in a professional performance and they would win 3-1 despite going a goal down. So France was, this was the beginning, obviously, Spain would go on to win in 2008, 2010, 2012. But they managed to come from one goal down to win, which is quite impressive. They then beat Brazil and Portugal, both games 1-0.
Fair play.
So a very difficult run
good
to
Portugal
the final.
Good Portugal team as well.
Very good Portugal team. So Zidane assisted Henri for them to beat Brazil, and then Henri won the penalty for Zidane to score against Portugal. So kind of Henri and Zidane moving forward, and Vieira to a degree, were really propelling this French team. But on paper, very, very strong. But with that, let's actually find out what happened in the final. So I've written here that both teams seemed up for it from the start, which it's a World Cup final. That's probably the minimum that you'd hope for. But it was quite physical. It was quite physical in the early
stages. It seemed like they
want to be again. Yeah, they really wanted to win. Can you imagine that? It only took 7 minutes for the referee, though, Elizondo, to award a penalty when he deemed Florin Malouda to have been fouled by that man, Marco Materazzi.
There he is.
So he's not enough to get his name in lights for replacing Nesta, getting sent off previously. He now gives away a penalty 7 minutes in. And he was always a bit of a
clumsy,
bastard, a bit clumsy
as well.
Yeah, exactly. Much more your physical defender. But Zidane scores an incredibly memorable penalty. He steps up. So he'd scored in the previous game, but this is the penalty that I think he'd get remembered.
There is a moment where he thinks he's missed this.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
So for those that don't know, he takes the Panenka penalty. So he steps up, kind of strokes it through the middle by chipping it, but chips it way too high. And it kisses the underside of the crossbar. So like you say, it almost bounces away, but it bounces behind the goal line, bounces back up, hits the crossbar a second time, which I always forget.
Yeah.
But it does definitely, without a shadow of doubt, cross the line. Yeah, it's not even close.
But he looks round. Yeah. Zidane, and it's all casual and like, oh yeah, I meant to do that you know, artistic wave. Yeah. But he just kind of wheels around and looks at the ref to say, that did go in, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He kind of unconvincingly raises his hands in the air and then looks to the ref.
Zidane, on the last occasion he took a penalty, whacked it hard to the goalkeeper's right. And if you remember, the Portuguese goalkeeper, Ricardo, got a hand to it. It's Zinedine Zidane here. Oh, it crossed the line, it's a goal. But how lucky almost is that? How casual, how cheeky. Only one of the world's great, great players would attempt anything as audacious as that, but he nearly paid the penalty, if he excused the pun.
But yeah, just a little two-step run up Panenka, and it is brilliant, but like you say, it's much closer than he meant to.
Definitely.
He's definitely put more into it than he planned. But after being the bad guy, following his red card earlier in the tournament, and then giving away a penalty in this game, it is Marco Materazzi again, this time redeeming himself in the 19th minute. If you look up the words towering header in the English Oxford Dictionary, you will find it just saying a citation saying, see, Materazzi, 2006 final.
Did he score?
He scores.
Shut up.
It's amazing.
This is the Materazzi final.
It really is. That's what's so strange. Obviously, you remember it being Zidane, but and when we've spoken about iconic finals in the past where it's been like, oh, it's Baggio against whoever, or it's Ronaldo against whoever, these two kind of players, it's strange that it's Zidane and Materazzi for different reasons. It's not like the talk was, oh, Materazzi's going to be marking Zidane. Like, they didn't come into that much contact throughout the game, but their narratives do. So Perlow delivers a very deep looping cross. It's not a brilliant corner because it's really high. It's not going with any particular pace, right towards the back of the six-yard box. But Materazzi rises like a salmon returning home, and he powers the ball into the goal. It's brilliant. It goes past Barthez. I think there's two French defenders on the line, and it manages to go between them as well. It's just a brilliant defensive header. And you can tell Materazzi was like, right, enough pissing about now. I've made myself a villain. It's time to be a hero.
Yeah.
So both teams battle, but there are a few, arguably different to the last week's podcast, where you're talking about the amount of clear-cut finals in this game that was very tight. In this one, it was well battled, but there weren't that many clear-cut chances. Luca Toni does strike the crossbar with a header from another Perlow corner, but that's really the only chance that happens in the rest of that first half, with both teams going in with the score level at 1-1. At the start of the second half, France start to control the game a lot more and have their first kind of consistent spell of possession. They have another foul on Florent Malouda that's turned down after a penalty appeal. And then Vieira, interestingly enough, I didn't know about this or don't remember this, but Vieira gets injured in about the 60th minute and gets substituted. And he'd been very good this tournament, scored a couple of goals to get France where they were. But that kind of disrupts the rhythm. And then we see for the first time in the second half, the game start to change a little.
Right.
So in the 62nd minute, a couple of minutes after Vieira's been injured, Luca Toni heads a goal that's disallowed for offside from a Perlow free kick. So Perlow just pulling the strings, as you'd expect from the dead ball situations. No, and both teams duel on, but again, not that many clear-cut opportunities. Yeah. And the game itself goes into extra time. So in the 104th minute, it's Gianluigi Buffon, who makes a potentially game-winning save. Gianni Buffon makes a potentially game-winning save when he tips a Zidane header over the crossbar. After a really good cross by Willy Sagnol. Buffon kind of maintaining concentration.
How
really
history
good.
Could be different.
Yeah, and Zidane loves a header in a final. Mm. We know that much. But he was denied by Buffon. But that would be Zinedine Zidane's last football-related contribution on a football pitch.
I was just
about
to ask that.
So 5 minutes later, him and Marco Materazzi are walking next to each other when seemingly, out of nowhere, Materazzi lightly pulls at Zidane's jersey and Zidane headbutts Marco Materazzi in the chest, sending him to the floor.
Now Materazzi did what? He said something? He certainly said something. Now what happens? He leaves football in disgrace and he leaves his team in big trouble. France down to 10 men, and the showpiece of the world game has an unsavoury moment here that will make the headlines beyond the result, I feel.
I was stunned.
I couldn't believe I was seeing it.
Because I think, from memory, even on TV, you kind of just see the last of it right in the bottom
you
corner.
You didn't know
of
what
the
had
screen.
Happened, did you?
No, exactly.
When it first played live. No. And then everyone was waiting for the replay to see what had happened.
Exactly.
And then it was so shocking.
I don't think I've ever seen... Like, you've seen headbutts or punches occasionally, or a kick or a push or something, but you've always seen what's led up to it. It's been boiling, they've been at each other. This seemingly comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It is crazy. It
does make you wonder what he'd been saying throughout.
So we'll get into that a lot in our version of Extra Time,
okay,
about what really happened in the red card. But on the pitch, it's Buffon who protests the assistant referee who didn't see what happened. So the ref had missed it, the assistant referee had missed it, and Buffon is trying to point out that Materazzi is on the floor clutching his chest. So the referee, Elizondo, again, saw Materazzi on the ground, so he halted his play to consult with his assistants. And according to the official match report handed in by the referees and the assistant referee, not one of them had seen what had happened. However, Luis Medina Cantalejo, who was the fourth official in charge of substitutions, etc., saw what happened and confirmed the incident. Now, that's the official report. So that is allowed, but the unofficial report is that people were shown illegal footage of what had happened from TV cameras, replays, things that they're not supposed to be able to consult.
Right.
Especially this time, obviously now you're far. Yeah. But at the time, you weren't allowed to look at TV broadcasting in case it influenced your decision. They showed the wrong angle, they show us kind of stuff. So they think that the fourth official saw that and said, look, I've just seen it on TV.
No,
this is what happened, which would have been illegal. The referee wouldn't
have have been sent off.
Absolutely, the right outcome, but probably the wrong method. So.
Yeah.
Elizondo issues Zidane a red card in the 110th minute. So the game eventually goes to penalties. And obviously Zidane, their main penalty taker, is not there to help influence the shootout.
Was he captain?
So crazily enough, he was captain. So he loses his head and that's pretty
harsh.
So
my question then is, would he, if France had won the shootout, would he have come back on and lifted the cup?
Oh, interesting. I don't think he'd be allowed, no. Even if they had won, he wouldn't have been allowed.
But if the game had finished, he wouldn't he be allowed?
Oh, interesting. That is a wonderful, like...
Someone get in contact from FIFA, please.
That would be so interesting. Yeah, would he be allowed? Because it's...
Because I know you're not in the game.
Yeah, yeah. But I, in all honesty, I don't actually know. So that's a really interesting question. But the game goes to penalties. Only player to miss was David Trezeguet. And then Fabio Grosso of semi-final fame steps up. So the left back steps up to score the winning penalty. And what's really interesting about the footage is it's a really good penalty. It's high, hard and to the right. Grosso sends Barthez the wrong way. And then Italy were crowned world champions for the fourth time. Okay. But the footage of the penalty as Grosso steps up is Andrea Pirlo crying his eyes out, desperately clinging on to Fabio Cannavaro's arm, which for Pirlo, who's so cool, calm, weird, collected, yeah. I don't think I've ever seen him emotional before.
Do you and need yet, a joint or something?
Well, he needed something to chill him out because it was crazy. It's the only time I've seen it, like to the point that I had to go back and be like, what's that, Pirlo?
That's random.
So he's literally just cuddling, holding onto the arm of Fabio Cannavaro, eyes really red where he's been crying, and then Grosso scores and he just runs off, both arms in the air. But nevertheless, Italy were crowned champions for the fourth time, the second highest in World Cup history at this point. And we go into our version of extra time.
Well, you have just witnessed 90 of the most gripping minutes of European football you will ever, ever see. But the good news is there's more to come.
So the question on everybody's lips post this World Cup was, what happened with the red card? Mm. So Zinedine Zidane partly explained in the immediate aftermath that there were repeated harsh insults about his mother that caused him to react. Materazzi said that he did trash talk Zidane, but that he argued that Zidane's behaviour had been very arrogant and that that had wound him up. Materazzi also claimed he didn't insult Zidane's mother, who was ill at the time, not that he knew that, because Materazzi said, I didn't talk about his mother. I lost my mother when I was 15, and even now I get emotional talk about it. I wouldn't do it.
It was his sister.
So Zidane later said that he didn't regret his actions because it would be like admitting that he was right to say all that. And what's interesting is French media did a poll in newspapers online in the aftermath saying, you know, do you still support Zidane after he did that? And 70% of the French public agreed with him that he was right to do it. And I love the, like, it was a crime of passion. I don't know why they're Spanish, but it was a crime of passion. And so, like, and so that's obviously how every French person
of course,
speaks.
Yeah, yeah.
So they seem to back him, even though that potentially that is what lost them the World Cup final.
Well, I guess if you're going to lose... If you could smash the person you lose to as you walk off the pitch,
it's
the way to do it, isn't it?
Exactly, it's a bit cathartic.
Like Rooney smashing Ronaldo would have made me feel better about Rooney.
That's true,
getting set off.
Yeah, it's that Roy Keane thing.
Do you know what? What I might do is I might smash into somebody just to make me feel better.
You have problems, Roy.
So eventually the truth would out when Materazzi offered his version of events, claiming that he grabbed Zidane's jersey and Zidane said, if you want my shirt, I'll give it to you afterwards.
Oh,
he replied to Zidane that he would prefer his sister. And then a year later, he said that the exact words he said were, I'd prefer the whore that is your sister. So that's what he said when asked about taking his shirt.
I assume he has a
Zidane.
Sister.
He did. He didn't know at the time. He literally says, I just said that because I hoped it would wind
why
him up,
did
which
that,
it did.
Zidane must have had worse.
You would assume so, but I don't know. It's very strange. But Zidane had previous to this, so it marked the 14th overall red card of Zidane's career, which is a lot, and people don't think about necessarily.
Yeah, but how many of them were for reactionary things?
So he, according to his quote, said that 12 out of the 14 were always reactionary,
right.
Which is interesting, because clearly you could get under his skin. You don't necessarily think that was Zidane, but clearly there were a lot of things that bothered him.
See,
you
he always
could
comes across
up.
As so cool and
exactly.
calm and collected, doesn't he? That's
but he clearly
random.
Has a bit of steel beneath that. So with that red card, it meant that he joined Cameroon's and Liverpool's Rigobert Song as the only player to ever be sent off during two separate World Cup tournaments.
Right.
Again, what an unwanted record for Zidane. Since Zidane had already retired, he chose to voluntarily serve 3 days of community service on FIFA's behalf as a substitute for his match ban, which I didn't realise until
I
researched
this. If he came back, maybe you're right.
Yeah, so if he did, I kept on saying that if he came back, he'd still be banned for three games, but actually...
he'd start.
Exactly, yeah. He'd be straight in there. It's
2026.
So despite his dismissal, Zidane would win the Golden Ball for the player of the tournament, but it was Andrea Pirlo who was named man of the match for the final. Right. And looking back at it, you can see why. So yeah. The tournament had a record number of yellow and red cards. We've previously spoken about this. Beat the previous record set by the 98 World Cup. Players received a record-breaking 345 yellow cards and 28 red cards.
That's crazy.
With Russian referee Valentin Ivanov handing out 16 yellows and 4 red cards in a match between Portugal and Holland in a match known as the Battle of Nuremberg. I have no memory of that game, but I'm sure it, well, it probably wasn't high on quality, but high on drama. Wow. But 4 red cards and 16 yellow in that game. The tournament also saw English referee Graham Pohl hit the headlines. Do you remember what for?
No, I don't.
He booked a player.
Oh, three times. Yeah, three times. Croatian guy.
That's right, yeah. Simeonica Croatia was booked 3 times.
That's amazing.
Absolutely crazy. So Graham Pohl made the headlines, the only English referee there. Cheers, Graham, representing England on the national stage.
Brilliant.
So despite the early goals that flooded the group stages, the knockout phase had a much lower goals per match ratio. So the group games were quite exciting.
Right.
But when it got to the knockout rounds, all the teams seemed to dry up. So a prime example of this is Portugal. They only scored in the 23rd minute of the round of 16 and then didn't score again until the third place playoff in the 88th minute.
Wow.
So they play like 4 games worth of minutes without scoring, which is amazing. They get to the third round because they keep on winning on penalties, obviously beat England on penalties.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would be named the most entertaining team, which I find really bizarre.
Was that for drama?
I really don't know because like they were good in the group stage, but they were terrible in the knockout rounds. And those, surely those like 3-4 games are the most important and what you remember. But weirdly, they were the most entertaining team. So the final started with each side scoring within the first 20 minutes, making it the only World Cup final between 1990 and 2014 in which both finalists scored.
Wow.
Which is crazy,
isn't it? Yeah.
If you think about like either 1-0s or 2-0s is pretty much the whole way or on penalties. So
that is what we found about World Cup finals, isn't it?
That is true.
They're either one-sided or dull.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly that. We've also spoken a little bit about England, but just to jog everyone's memory of this tournament. So we flattered to deceive. This is the end of our golden generation.
Of course, yeah. Self-styled.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody else gave us that crown, but we struggled to wins against Paraguay and Trinidad and Tobago before drawing against Sweden. The only thing memorable about that 2-2 game was Joe Cole's goal outside of the right.
Yeah, I remember that.
Really good volley.
Yeah.
Pretty much the only thing Joe Cole did in an England shirt, really. But yeah, so we'd only just about beat Paraguay and Trinidad and Tobago. We then beat Ecuador 1-0 in the last 16.
Beckham's free kick.
Yep. But again, struggled against a poor Ecuador team.
Yeah.
And then we came unstuck against Portugal on penalties. So Lampard, Gerrard and Carragher.
Was that 0-0, the game?
It was.
All right.
Because Portugal didn't
score. Yeah, that's what I thought when you said it. Yeah.
Lampard, Gerrard, Carragher all missed. Do you remember the one English player to score in this penalty shootout?
Ashley Cole?
No.
Vassell?
No.
I don't know.
No. It shocked me. Owen Hargreaves.
Oh, yeah, he was decent at penalties, wasn't he? Yeah.
So he was the only player to score for England.
Yeah.
Pretty abysmal. If I remember correctly as well, like there were a lot of retakes in this because this was when they first started talking about keepers coming off their lines.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Carragher scores and then he has to retake. No, Carragher misses, he has to retake and he misses again.
I think you're right.
And the winner of the Golden Boot for this tournament, do you remember?
2006.
We've spoken about him last week.
It's not Thomas Müller.
Nope.
He doesn't score in World Cups.
No, he scores in World Cups. Doesn't score in Euros, I think you'll find.
Give me the country.
Germany.
Closer.
Miroslav Klose continues his goal scoring.
Fair play.
He scores 5 goals to win the Golden Boot.
Was that the game when he scored all 5 against one team? No, it couldn't have been World Cup.
No,
that must have been the World Cup before.
He gets a hat-trick against
Saudi Arabia.
And they're all headers. Yeah. That's what's unique
about
that from memory.
Good old Miroslav.
Miroslav. Does it in a German shirt. Not so much at club level, but nevertheless, you'd probably want it that way around. So with that, and with Italy being crowned world champions, we hope that you'll join us next week as we get to talk about that Spain team. Imagine just going about your daily life making a coffee. A director shouts cut and you suddenly realise you were Gary Oldman all along.